Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Iran shoots down Israeli drones in the latest confrontation. Global calls for restraint. Both East and West fearful of what more conflict could mean for the region and the world. So what's the thinking in Iran and Israel, and what's next? I'm Elizabeth Puranam, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. Let's bring in our guests now. In Tehran, Mohammad Mirandi, Dean of Faculty of World Studies at the University of Tehran. In Tel Aviv, Gideon Levy, a columnist for the Haaretz newspaper. And in London, Roxanne Farman-Fermayen, Professor of Modern Middle East Politics at the University of Cambridge. A very warm welcome to all of you. Mr. Levy, I'll start with you in Tel Aviv. What was Israel's message to Iran with these attacks?
The message was quite clear. We can, we might, but for the time being, we restrain. And that's, I think, was a very clever message. It's very rare that I can say anything good about the Israeli policy, but this is one of the moments in which at least they didn't go wild and did something very, very measured. And I hope that by this, we are concluding this vicious circle until the next one.
Ms. Farman-Fermayen, Israel's National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir tweeted after the attack, just one word, feeble. What does this tell us about the internal politics in Israel right now, and who's in charge?
Well, I think we have normally seen that the Israelis have tended to hit back very hard if they are hit. It's part of the policy that goes all the way back to Ben-Gurion. And I think we also had expected that there could be really serious escalation from the comments that Benjamin Netanyahu made after the Iranian show of force in retaliation for the Israeli hitting of its own Damascus consulate. So I think there was the anticipation that this could go considerably further. And I would agree with Gideon that that it's quite a relief that, in fact, both Iran and Israel seem to have practiced some restraint and that they are looking to wind this down, hopefully.
Okay. Mr. Mirandi, how is this being viewed in Iran? Ms. Farman-Fermayen was saying that, you know, both Iran and Israel have practiced some restraint. The criticism of Iran in its attack on April 13th was sending more than 300 missiles and drones is not restrained. So how is Iran viewing, you know, three drones coming across?
Well, I think the Iranian strike was misrepresented for the benefit of the Israeli regime. First of all, the Iranians have shown patience for a very long period of time when Iranian advisors and soldiers and officers were in Syria fighting ISIS and al-Qaeda. The Israelis would attack the Iranians, but because they wanted and they were helping ISIS and al-Qaeda, they were alongside the Golan Heights. But at that time, the focus was on Syria and to stabilize it from and prevent it from falling. Then more recently, again, the Israeli regime struck Iranian officers and the Iranians again showed patience. But when they struck the embassy, that was a very important red line, because after that, then the Israeli regime could strike embassy after embassy and get away with it. So the Iranians felt they had to respond and respond severely. But what the Iranians did was they didn't carry out a heavy strike. They actually carried out a very smart operation. They sent roughly, 200 drones, all of them very old drones, and they were decoys. And it took 4 or 5 hours for them to get to Palestine. And when they got close, they sent two sets of missiles, old missiles that, again, were decoys, and 10 to 20 more modern missiles. So the drones and the old missiles, which costed Iran almost nothing, the Israelis and the Americans engaged and fired their missiles. And the Israelis alone, according to their own numbers, spent $1.35 billion. The Iranians maybe spent, $10 million. The Iranians knew that those would be downed. That was the purpose, so that the other missiles could get through. Those 10 to 15, 20 missiles, They hit two bases, one in the south, the air base with F-5s, and one in the north. So it wasn't a major strike. There were two bases that were targeted, and the missile struck those bases.
Okay, and again, in the context of that Iranian attack, how is the how are the Israeli drones being sent into Isfahan being seen? And, you know, at the time of this recording, Iran hasn't said that Israel is responsible for this attack. It's choosing to say infiltrators. Why is that?
Well, because they are small drones, and most probably they were launched from somewhere inside the country. Iran is a very large country. It's the size of Germany, France, and Britain combined. And therefore, they cannot determine now who actually carried them out. But no one was hurt. No one, no installations were damaged. It was a non-event. And the three drones were downed. When I called a colleague in Isfahan, she said that she hadn't heard anything and her relatives hadn't heard anything. So nothing really happened. So it's a bit confusing now because it's effectively no operation took place, even though there was an unknown American who claimed otherwise. And so I don't know what the reaction of the Iranian government ultimately will be, because is it a non-event or is it an attack?
Yeah, I want to talk to our other guests, especially Ms. Farman Farmayan, about whether it's a non-event or not in just a moment. But Mr. Levy, if I can bring you back in, because, you know, your opening comments about how this was an uncharacteristically measured response by this Israeli government. Why do you think that is?
You know, even a broken watch says the right time twice a day. I think more seriously that Israelis or the Israeli government finally understood that getting now into a confrontation, a violent confrontation with Iran, will be really almost suicidal. We are stuck in Gaza, and the last thing we need now is war with Iran. In any case, war with Iran is something very explosive and very dangerous. Iran is not Hamas, Iran is not Hezbollah. Those are different capabilities, different sizes. And I wish that Israel would have been more careful even before this. But in any case, at the last moment, maybe, Israel understood, the Israeli government understood that going now for a confrontation will be not only stupid, but also very, very dangerous.
Mr. Levy, we've heard a lot over the last 6 months about how Prime Minister Netanyahu wants to continue the war in Gaza because that will ensure he stays in power. We've also heard about how he wants to widen the conflict with Iran. He wants, because that will drag America in. Do you think that that is the case or has been the case so far, and that we might be seeing him stepping back from that position?
When decision makers are getting their decisions, it's never only one calculation. And this is a little oversimplified, and many, Elizabeth, are claiming like this, that the only motivation of Netanyahu is his personal agenda. I don't think so. His personal agenda is very dominant, but it's not his own only consideration, because he knows very well, even from the point of view of personal agenda, that the catastrophe with Iran, a fiasco with Iran, will be also ending his career. So what will he exactly gain out of it? Yes, we continue this war in Gaza without any purpose, without any goals, without any plan for the day after. And that's by itself bad enough, but Iran is a different game.
Okay, and we can, of course, not lose sight of what all of this means for the war on Gaza. Ms. Farman Farmayan, if I can bring you in on a point that Mr. Mirandi was making. He was calling this a non-event, but I do want to talk about the significance of Isfahan. Is it significant for its military-industrial complex? We have mentioned it hosts a nuclear facility. It even hosts a major air base, even if, you know, if the F-14 fighter jets there are aging.
Well, I think this was really an exchange that on both sides was very symbolic. And I think it was no accident that the Israelis chose to make their particular move in Isfahan, because it is a city of great importance. It's a serious city, first of all, also culturally, but it has the nuclear facilities around there. They have hit it before, and in fact had hit it some time ago, about a year and a half ago, a factory by a set of drones that likewise the provenance of those were clearly at Israel's behest, but it was unclear from where in Iran they were emanating. And I think that was also part of the symbolic element, that these were drones that came from within the country, indicating that Israel has close enough linkages with opposition forces that it can trigger an internal attack, if you will.
Sorry to interrupt you, Ms. Forman-Firmayan, but yeah. Are you saying that the drones came from within Iran itself?
That is one of the things that is being discussed, and it's very possible and likely, yes, at least some of them.
Mr. Moran,
I think that,
okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, please continue.
So I think it was very calculated, this move, and I think it was also very possibly part of a deal that the Israelis had made with the Americans. There was a huge amount of pressure by the Americans and the other international powers that had helped deflect Iran's attack that came to Israel's aid. But I think a repeat would have been very unlikely, number one. And number two, I think the United States really wanted to ensure this did not escalate. So I would not be surprised if there was some deal in this, that if the Israelis conformed to a symbolic and measured response, the Americans would veto the resolution in front of the UNSC, the United Nations Security Council, that had been proposed to recognize Palestine as a state, which they proceeded to do yesterday.
A lot to unpick from what you've said. But don't you think that the United States, given its history of vetoing anything that is in any way in favor of Palestinians, wouldn't they have vetoed that anyway?
Well, I think it's more stark at the moment. Certainly the history would suggest that. On the other hand, they have really had to come out and support a two-state solution. And how does one do that if one of the parties is not a state? So I think that's more critical now than probably it has been in the past.
Okay. Mr. Mirandi, if I can come to you with one of the points that Ms. Farman-Firmayan made, which is the possibility that this Israeli drone attack could have been carried out from Iranian soil.
These are not the sort of drones that you've seen Hezbollah use against the Israeli regime, or the Israeli regime use against Hezbollah, or the Russians use against the Ukrainians. These are very small drones, from my understanding. They're not the sort of drones that we may be thinking about. So it's quite easy to obtain them. But they did fail, and they were unable to penetrate any of these bases. And there's also another issue that is important, and that is that because in the past the United States and Israelis, along with the help of other Western embassies, both in Iran and in surrounding countries, when they would carry out sabotage, that created a culture in Iran of building key installations underground. And so almost everything that is of particular importance is really inaccessible to the Israelis, just like in Yemen, where their drones and missiles and radar systems are deep underground and American bombing has no impact, or in Lebanon, where Hezbollah's tunnels or Hamas, their tunnels, they are deep underground. This is a strategy that has been pursued over the last couple of years. So these drones really wouldn't have much of an impact, but they were not able to penetrate the base.
But what about the context that this attack is taking place in? You know, as Ms. Farman-Firmayan mentioned, there was another Israeli attack in Isfahan just over a year ago. I think they even took credit for that on a weapons production facility. A lot has happened since then. And the context in which events take place can define a conflict as much as an attack itself, can't they? So again, what do you make of the importance of this attack in the current context?
Well, first of all, I'd like to point out that I have no doubt that the Americans would have vetoed the UN Security Council resolution on Palestine. It was a foregone conclusion. They even lobbied in the other countries before it came to the Security Council to vote against it in the subcommittee, if that's what it's called. So what really happened was that the Iranians said to the Americans through the messages that they that went back and forth that we're going to hit them the Israelis very hard, not like last time, not with old drones and old missiles and a few missiles, newer missiles, but we're going to hit them really hard, and our policy has changed. From now on, we won't allow them to kill Iranians anywhere, whether they're in embassies or outside, inside Iran or outside. And the Americans took that very seriously, and the Americans don't want an escalation because they know, first of all, that Israel would lose in that exchange. And second of all, it could spread beyond, it could spread across the region. And that would be catastrophic for the global economy, the oil and gas that comes from this region. We all know how important it is.
Yeah, Mr. Levy, I want to bring you in here on the messaging from America and how that's being viewed in Israel, because we hear nearly every day from the Americans that they don't want an escalation in the region. And before this Israeli attack, they said that they wouldn't support any offensive action from Israel, but they will always come to Israel's defense. Their support for Israel is ironclad, and so on and so forth. But how is it being seen in Israel when America has to come to Israel's defense because of Israel's offensive actions? The missiles and drones that they helped shoot down over Israel on the 1st of April was because of the Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus 2 weeks earlier.
You see, the linkage that you do, rightly so, Elizabeth, is not being done by most of the Israelis. They don't see the connection between the assassination in Damascus and the Iranian attack. And there is a very clear and logical linkage between them two. But Israelis don't do it. Israelis don't ask themselves, unfortunately, was it really necessary, this assassination, in this time when we are stuck in Gaza? What came out of it? What do you earn out of it? What does Israel earn? And I'm putting aside all the moral and legal questions about assassinations. I'm speaking about realpolitik. Does this really serve any of Israeli interests? But those questions are not asked in Israel, because Israel is quite narrow-minded in this war and following the government quite blindly. And the Americans, because you asked about them, as long as they just talk and just advise and just threaten and just warn, Israel can quite ignore it. It's only about America, which is threatening to take measures. Until now, America didn't take any measures to stop Israel, to influence Israel, to make Israel more moderate and more reasonable. I hope this will come, but let's not forget, America not only put the veto, and here I'm totally agreeing with Professor Marandi, the American, and with you, Elizabeth, the Americans would have put the veto in any case. The Americans would supply Israel with weapons in any case. And the question is, where do they stop?
Ms. Farmayan, given what Mr. Levy has said, despite America's actions about de-escalating, and Mr. Marandi himself is saying that America doesn't want a wider region, how much are its actions, because from what Mr. Levy is saying, they're enabling Israel. So how much are the American actions pushing the region closer to the brink of war?
Well, it's a very good question, and I think we see that it's not, you know, the left hand knoweth not what the right hand does. I think there is a balancing act taking place. I think that President Biden is facing an election. He's got a very outspoken Muslim population that he would like to garner their votes. He's risking those by his enormous support of Israel. At the same time, he's trying to bring on board to his side the Saudis and the other Gulf states, and they're being very hesitant. He's facing a situation in the Red Sea, I think, that he hadn't really intended at first. And I agree with Dr. Marandi that the actions of these groups are often quite difficult for Iran to control. It's certainly not, they are partners, they are not proxies. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, the Gulf states are not supporting the maritime defense group that the United States has mounted there. So I think that in many ways, we're seeing that the United States is trying to cover too many bases and to please too many people. And I think what happened here is that when the Israeli attack took place in Damascus, which then had this knock-on effect, it shifted the focus of the story from Gaza and the famine to the possible escalation of war with Iran. And I would say that was very much on the minds of those planning this in one way. And in another way, it was also something that involved the United States much more.
We only have about 3 minutes left in the program, and I'd like to ask a very important question to each of you. Mr. Mirandi, I'll start with you. Do you think we're in a new era of conflict between Iran and Israel, no longer in the shadows, given the direct attacks on each other's soil?
Well, the Israelis have been carrying out attacks before. It's only this time that the Iranians have responded. And yes, that Iran has said that it has changed the equation. But Iran will not allow the focus to be moved away from Gaza. There is no way that the Israelis or the Americans or anyone will be able to move attention away from a genocide or a Holocaust. So it has changed, but the Iranians will be very careful to make sure the focus stays on Gaza and that Israel feels weakened by Iran's capabilities.
Mr. Levy?
I'm quite concerned because we are sitting on a real explosive mountain, and any small mistake can lead us to real catastrophe. I wish I knew what are the real motivations of Iran. I really think we could have had different relationship with all my critique about the occupation, the apartheid, and the way that Israel is treating the Palestinians, the shameful way that Israel is treating the Palestinians. I still think that Iran and Israel could have found much more of a common language, like before, by the way, like in the 70s. And I really wish that this will change one day. My dream is to get to Tehran one day.
Ms. Fadman.
As a tourist.
Ms. Fadman, your last thoughts?
I think it's changed it. In a minor way, I think the fact that Iran responded the way it did has, to some degree, changed the goalposts in indicating to Israel that it will respond again should Israel continue to attack its generals and its people with impunity. There is no impunity anymore. I think that has changed the goalposts somewhat, but I don't think that what we're really hearing is the drumbeat of an escalating war between the two of them.
Thank you so much to Roxanne Fadman in London, Mohammed Mirandi in Tehran, and Gideon Levy in Tel Aviv. This episode was produced by Dermot Fleming, Imogen Kimber, Michael Harwood, and Jimmy Getahoon. Studio sound was by Alvaro Galan Madrid. The program was edited by Romel Asuncion, Lin Nguyen, and Joe DeFries. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening, and tune in on Saturday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, new and expecting mothers navigate an increasingly treacherous war zone. That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.